Chapter 9. Jeff had no idea what time it was when he awoke in the pitch blackness of the underground fort sometime later, huddled under a thin blanket upon the old brown sofa. He had used his phone to light his way to the couch inside the fort rather than fumble with the oil lamps, but when he found the phone on the cushion beside him, its battery was completely dead. He couldn't even see his hand in front of his face, but he could hear the scuffling of feet upon the plywood ceiling overhead.
"Look, it's already unlocked."
"Don't tell Mick. I'll never hear the end of it."
Jeff lifted his head from the makeshift pillow his down vest had become and shielded his eyes as a blast of sunlight lit up the room from the opening hatchway. He tossed the phone aside and stripped a blanket from his body to sit up as the hurricanes began to file down the rope ladder. Brain dropped to the floor first, and immediately began to tinker with the nearby oil lamp. Once the lamp began to glow, he turned about and jumped back, startled to see his leader sitting groggily upon the couch.
"Jeff!"
he exclaimed.
"Where you been? We thought the cops got you."
Jeff rubbed his eyes. "What time is it?" Axel descended the rope ladder next.
"It's 11:45. You been down here all night?"
"Not all night." He bent over to pull on his sneakers. "What are you guys doing here?"
"Emergency gang meeting,"
Brain said.
"Mick said we needed to find you."
"Well, you found me. Congratulations." Axel called up to the next hurricane in line.
"Jeff's here. I guess we can go home now."
Crazy Legs ducked his head inside the fort.
"Hey, Jeff."
Jeff stood up and ruffled his hair with his fingers.
"Where's Mick?"
The skinny boy started down the ladder.
"He's coming."
Brain crossed the fort to light the second lamp.
"He texted everybody to cut out of school because you were missing in action."
Crazy Legs dropped to the floor and grimaced.
"I told him you'd come around when you were ready, but it's like talking to a wall. He doesn't listen to anyone anymore. You gotta set him straight."
Jeff frowned. "What do you want me to do, beat him up?" Crazy Legs shrugged.
"I don't know. Do something. You're our leader, not him."
Jeff bit his lip, knowing he might be in a different time zone by this time tomorrow. More voices wafted into the fort from overhead, and from their argumentative tones, he surmised that the rest of the hurricanes had arrived.
"It was probably just a squirrel,"
TJ said.
"Or a rabbit. You know, a bunny."
"It wasn't a rabbit,"
Bumbles replied.
"The whole bush shook."
"Quit being so paranoid,"
Mick said from above. He dangled a sneaker into the hatchway, fishing for the rope ladder and finally catching it. Quickly, he climbed down the ladder and dropped to the floor, scoffing at the sight of his disheveled friend.
"Well, well. If it isn't our fearless leader," he said. "Thanks for stopping by."
Jeff peered up through the hatchway as the next boy started down the ladder. "What's all the arguing about?"
"Ah, Bumble says he thought he saw someone following us in the woods."
Mick waved off the lanky boy.
"It was probably just a rabbit."
"It wasn't a rabbit,"
Bumbles insisted as he landed on the floor.
"Maybe it was Bigfoot,"
TJ yelled from overhead before starting through the hatchway. Jeff shrugged. "If he thinks he saw something, we should probably check it out."
"We did,"
his lieutenant huffed.
"We spent 10 minutes combing the stupid bushes. He's just being a dumbass like usual."
TJ jumped down without the aid of the ladder. The floor shook and both oil lamps teetered before Axel and Brain steadied them.
"Hey, all."
"Don't do that again,"
Mick growled.
"Sorry,"
TJ said. Denny entered the fort and pulled the hatchway door shut behind him before he continued down the ladder. In contrast to TJ's athletic pounce, he struggled with every rung of the ladder, panting and groaning all the way down until he dropped laboriously to the floor. He turned to face the gang, with his left eye sporting a shiner, his lower lip puffy and black.
"Hey, Jeff. How you doing?"
"I'm okay." Jeff looked him up and down. "You look like you got hit by a bus." Denny smiled.
"I'm not sure what hit me, but I'll live."
Jeff stepped up onto the raised platform and beheld his friends gathered about him, noting the bumps and bruises some of them had sustained in the prior evening's harrowing fight. He felt a twinge of shame for missing the start of the fight, and he wondered if events might have transpired differently had they not been disadvantaged from the beginning. "You guys rocked it last night. I'm proud of you." A few of them shuffled their feet and looked away in response. Finally, Brain said,
"You did too, Jeff. Curly would have been toast if it wasn't for their dirty trick."
"Happy Jack got what he deserved,"
TJ added. Brain nodded.
"I knew you'd come through, Jeff. I saw your car and..."
Mick silenced him with a cold glare. He pulled out a cigarette and tapped it against the lampstand before sticking it between his lips. Then he cupped the sleeve of his jacket in his palm to remove the hot glass chimney of the lamp. Slowly and deliberately, he bent over the open flame to light his cigarette, its tip glowing bright red as he inhaled. He stood upright and exhaled a cloud of smoke into the fort before placing the chimney back onto the lamp.
"Of course, things might have gone better if you had reported here when you were supposed to."
Jeff winced. "Reported? Who do I report to? You?" Mick glared back.
"Somebody has to do their job around here."
"Well, the whole thing was your idea in the first place." Mick stepped up onto the platform before him.
"Really, Jeff? I set that fight up for Train. Remember him? Or maybe you rather forget. Maybe you're okay with some scumbag killing our friend, but I'm not. This is war, whether you like it or not. Train laid down his life for the cause, and I'm willing to do the same thing."
Jeff gritted his teeth. The last thing Train wanted was to die in some filthy alley. This ain't war. This is nuts. So spare me the Avenging Crusader crap, Mick. It doesn't work on me.
"No, the only thing that works on you is some chick. What's her name?"
"Leave her out of this," Jeff said. "She has nothing to do with this." Mick leaned forward.
"No? Where were you last night?"
"Saving your ass. You were the twitch of a finger away from a toe tag, remember?" Mick nodded slowly.
"Yeah, I remember. Lucky for me, you're not a total schlep. But why weren't you here before the fight?"
Jeff glanced about at the rest of the gang. Some of his friends seemed shocked by the heated exchange between two old friends, but others looked on in earnest, as if Mick's line of questioning was fair. "I lost track of time," he said.
"Lost track of time,"
Mick repeated. He hopped onto the platform and stood nose to nose with his leader, flicking his cigarette aside without breaking eye contact.
"Maybe you're too busy following her scent. Maybe you ought to step aside for a while."
Jeff laughed. "Ha! Step aside? Mick, I'm stepping out. You want to shoot it out with Curly? Have at it." He turned to face the gang and pointed a thumb back at Mick. "If you guys want to end up like Train, just keep listening to him. I'm done." Several mouths dropped open in astonishment, but Crazy Legs rushed forward.
"Guys, wait!"
Mick brushed the skinny boy aside and grabbed Jeff's sleeve.
"What did you become such a pussy?"
Jeff whirled about in a rage to land a fist flush against Mick's cheek. His startled lieutenant recoiled from the blow before gnashing his teeth and planting a left hook upon his leader's jaw. The impact knocked Jeff off the platform and he crashed into the sidewall, toppling over the stolen skis. TJ rushed forward to help him as Mick cocked his fist and pressed forward. Denny lunged forward to restrain him while Jeff jerked himself free of TJ's grasp, wiping his bloody lip with the back of his hand and rebuking Mick's sneer with a fuming glare. Crazy Legs wedged himself between his friends and pushed back at them.
"Stop it!"
Without uttering another word, Jeff turned about and jostled past the hurricane standing in his way. He scampered up the rope ladder and threw the hatchway door open, allowing it to bang loudly against the plywood rooftop. Once outside, he grabbed the handle on the hatchway door and slammed it shut again, leaving the hurricanes to stew under the command of their new leader. So that was that. Jeff sucked on a fresh fat lip courtesy of his best friend as he stood outside the underground fort amid the muffled arguments of the boys inside. He turned about and stormed up the path towards the plazas, crossing the log over the dry ravine and climbing the pine needle slope to Mr. Big. So much for fond farewells, he said. He patted his pockets and turned back in a panic. My keys! In his impetuous departure, he had left the keys along with his phone and his vest inside the fort. A humbling return for his personal belongings was unthinkable. Even a tornado pummeling seemed preferable to more hurricane humiliation. He smirked at the comparison, but already he was envisioning new options available to him without the burden of gang leadership. Peace with the tornadoes seemed more remote than ever with Mick in charge now, although he regretted resigning his friends to the same jeopardy that had ultimately cut Train's life short. Their plight was far too perilous to simply abandon them to the whims of a reckless, brazen leader, whether they realized it or not. A thin path snaked down the pine needle slope to the left, back across the ravine and up toward tornado territory, for there was time to kill before he could return to the fort to retrieve his belongings without further confrontation. It has to start somewhere, he told himself. He swallowed hard and started down the winding path. 20 minutes later, he crept through a yard on Sapphire Lane, nearing the rear of a house with his heartbeat in his throat. A California beachfront still beckoned him from the back of his mind. But the Pacific coast felt worlds away from his present location, crouching behind a raspberry bush on the edge of the Matthews property. Unlike his lieutenant, Craig was not completely devoid of reason, and Jeff knew a slim chance for peace still existed if they could simply talk long enough to convince him that Happy Jack's stabbing was accidental. Jeff drew a deep breath as he rose from the cover of the bush. He followed a barren garden bed down the side of the yellow house to the front gutter, where he peered around the corner before running past a shaded basement window to the front steps. The house appeared unoccupied, but he was skeptical, for both gangs often used the illusion of vacancy to protect their strongholds during times of conflict. He yanked open the storm door and rapped on the wooden front door, already wary of his visibility on the cement steps. Loud footsteps clopped through the house, and the basement curtains fluttered, while Jeff leaned toward the window, trying to identify the eyeball staring up at him. The front door opened an inch, and Willie stuck his nose through the crack like a rat sniffing a hunk of cheese.
What do you want, Hollister?
I gotta talk to Craig, Jeff told him.
He doesn't want to talk to you.
I ain't leaving until he does.
You by yourself?
Yes, I swear.
Hold on.
The door shut completely for a moment. A moment later, it reopened halfway to reveal Craig standing beside Willie.
Talk fast, Hollister,
the leader warned. Jeff drew a deep breath. I'm sorry about Happy Jack.
Not sorry enough.
Craig pushed the front door open all the way, revealing Zack standing to his right, cracking his knuckles. I quit the Hurricanes, Jeff said quickly. I'm not their leader anymore.
Bad idea. Now you don't have any friends.
Zack pushed the storm door open and stepped outside. Without saying a word, he shoved an open palm into Jeff's chest, launching him from the top step. Jeff landed flat on his back on the front lawn as the three tornadoes mocked him with laughter. Painfully, he lifted his head to see Phil enter the front yard to his left as a garage door rolled open to his right, revealing Tony with a large crescent wrench in his hand. Jeff rolled to his knees and eyed the tornado leader in the doorway. Who's next, Craig? You? Me? One of them? Craig stepped outside and stood beside his bodyguard.
You, I think.
Willie snickered again. But the tornado leader was no longer laughing. His reply, spoken more as a matter of fact than of mockery.
You gotta admit, he's got balls coming here like this,
Zack said. Willie grinned.
But not much brains.
Jeff ignored them. You came to the wake for a reason, Craig. I know you hear what I'm saying. I'm not in control anymore, but you can still make it happen. Craig rubbed his chin in thought.
Bring me Mick's gun, and we'll talk.
Jeff stood up and brushed himself off. Mick's not the killer. Curly's gotta go down. You know it. The tornadoes exchanged glances, but their leader leaned back and folded his arms across his chest.
I got an idea. How about we give Curly what he wants and be done with it?
Craig snapped his fingers, and the tornadoes rushed forward. Jeff turned and sprinted away from them, running past Phil's lunging grasp into the backyard, down Ruby Road, and across Diamond Street, sprinting for the safety of the woods, until he reached the mouth of the path into neutral territory. Only then did he stop to catch his breath and look back to see that no one was actually chasing him anymore. Leaving the dangers of tornado territory behind him, Jeff descended the wooded hill and crossed the dry ravine before climbing the opposite bank laden with pine cones and needles to the trunk of Mr. Big again. Panting heavily, he sat upon one of its thick, protruding roots to catch his breath, relishing a clearer head from the physical exertion. He shuddered from a breeze cutting through the trees, and he yearned for a sunny day in a faraway place, for life already felt cold enough in Salisbury. His mother's heartless diatribe, his lieutenant's contemptuous disrespect, his friend's cool indifference, his enemy's boorish derision, all would lose their sting as the miles amassed behind him. The immediate plan was simple enough. Recover his vest and keys from the fort, return home for clothes and money, and retrieve the Camaro that was hopefully still parked in seclusion near the upper plaza. From there, one final obligation stood in the way of the open road calling him. If I didn't tell her I could leave today, he said. No, that wouldn't be right, he thought. The hurricanes might have turned their backs on him, but Cindy hadn't. And he still hoped against hope that he could somehow persuade her to come with him. He had to ask her, for he knew he would regret it forever if he didn't, and he already had enough regrets. Waiting until midnight or early morning to leave town might be a mistake, but it felt like a risk worth taking, and it seemed better than spending a lifetime wondering what might have been. As the breath returned to his lungs, he gazed up at the towering pine rising over him. The tree was like an old friend to him, a reassuring landmark that home was not far away and safe haven was near at hand. He remembered climbing its limbs with his friends in younger days, and daydreaming with his brother while lying upon its soft needle bed beneath its long branches. The tree appeared the same as it had the first day he had seen it, although his own life had transformed dramatically during the span of 18 years, a mere fraction of the massive tree's existence. He suspected he was far less significant to the tree than the tree was to him, yet he still felt a connection to it, and wondered if he might ever pass its way again. He rose to his feet and started down the familiar rabbit path without looking back, jogging along the winding trail and across the ravine bridge again. He climbed the gentle slope to the semicircle of pines, intending to enter the fort through the escape tunnel. But as he approached the clearing, he sensed that someone was still inside the fort, for the hatchway door was not camouflaged in its customary fashion, and the lock was missing. Jeff shrugged. All he wanted was his keys, and if anyone wanted to give him a hard time about it, they could have a taste of his knuckles, just like Mick had. He knelt down and pulled up on the handle, noting the hazy glow of the oil lamps inside as the hatchway door cracked open. The door felt heavier than usual, and, curiously, a rope had been tied to its inner handle, leading down into the murkiness of the fort. He raised the hatchway door higher to get a better view inside, only to hear the sounds of a heavy object sliding across wood, followed by the shatter of glass on the floor. The orange glow within the fort suddenly brightened and flickered, accompanied by a startled cry from within.
Help!
The voice said.
I can't move!
Jeff threw the hatchway door completely open, horrified by the thought of what had just occurred. He stuck his head through the hatchway to see flames spreading across the carpet, fueled by the oil of the shattered lamp on the floor. Sitting in the far corner of the fort was a boy in a hurricane's jacket, his wrists tied before him and his ankles bound to the legs of a folding chair.
Bumbles!
Jeff! Get me out of here!
Every rung of the rope ladder had been severed, and its two longest lengths had been lashed together with one end tied to the inner handle of the hatchway door, the other wrapped around a leg of the lampstand, now partially suspended from the floor. Jeff spun about on the seat of his pants and dangled his feet inside the fort with flames licking at the soles of his sneakers, for already the oily fire had begun to climb the short wall to the left, while the right arm of the sofa was also ablaze. Grabbing the lip of the hatchway, he swung his body inside over the growing flames, kicking the dangling lampstand into pieces before dropping to the floor clear of the fire. He rushed to Bumble's side and dug his fingernails at the knotted ropes around the boy's ankles. Who did this to you?
Curly and JJ. They jumped me while I was closing up the fort.
Bumbles wriggled and squirmed.
I knew someone was spying on us.
Hold still, Jeff said. I'm almost done.
Bumbles gazed over him with widening eyes.
Look!
Jeff glanced back to see black smoke rolling from the right armrest of the couch as fire consumed its fabric. Both plywood walls by the hatchway were now ablaze, as was the leg and tabletop of the wooden stand still suspended by the rope. He focused on his friend's lashings with renewed urgency, finally solving the knot and pulling the rope free from the boy's ankles. His eyes watered from the sweltering flames as he tugged at his friend's hand still bound by the ropes.
Follow me. Stay low.
Bumbles slid off the chair and crawled along the side of the fort, while Jeff grabbed the left armrest of the couch, already angled away from the short front wall before them. He jammed the couch hard into the blazing corner, stifling the flames for a moment and providing a more direct path for the smoke to escape through the hatchway.
Do you want me to climb out? I'll fry!
Jeff pointed to a dark opening in the short wall behind the couch.
That way!
The tunnel? Are you serious?
The burning remnants of the lampstand broke free from its charred rope, bouncing off the cushion of the relocated sofa before crashing in a heap of fire into the center of the fort. Flames spread across the carpet and along the wall across from them, nipping at the edge of the raised platform. The hatchway could not ventilate all the smoke, so the air inside the fort continued to foul.
Go! Keep your head down!
Bumbles crawled into the mouth of the tunnel.
I can't even see where I'm going!
Suddenly, Jeff remembered why he came back into the fort in the first place.
My vest!
He cried, looking frantically about the fort.
Where's my vest?
That green thing? Crazy Legs took it with him.
Why? Damn it!
Bumbles drew his legs completely inside the tunnel and writhed his way into the darkness.
Oh no,
he finally said. Jeff stuck his head inside the tunnel and inched his way forward on the heels of his lanky friend.
What's the matter?
The tunnel's collapsed. It's solid earth. We gotta go back.
Relax. Reach over your head. Bumbles sighed in the darkness.
There's a ladder here.
Despite their predicament, Jeff felt a twinge of pride. The addition of an escape tunnel hadn't been a popular decision when the Hurricanes constructed the fort, but his insistence on an extra week of digging had paid off.
Go ahead, stand up.
As Bumbles stood, Jeff grabbed his friend by the ankles and used the leverage to pull him closer to the vertical shaft. He found the ladder in the darkness and groped his way up each rung to another hatchway door 8 feet above the floor of the tunnel. The hatchway did not budge, however, even with the added persuasion of his shoulder.
What's the matter?
Jeff strained against the hatch.
It's blocked! I can't move it at all! Give me a hand!
Bumbles held up his bonded hands in the dim firelight.
How?
Jeff tried once more to open the hatchway, but the best he could do was raise it an inch, as if a heavy object had been placed upon it. He climbed back down to the bottom of the shaft where the smell of smoke was stronger than ever.
Keep working on that knot.
His friend's voice quivered.
Where are you going?
I need a lever.
Jeff dropped to his stomach and wriggled back to the entrance of the tunnel to survey the fort. The easel and poster boards burned like a torch upon the raised platform, and most of the sofa was now afire. Thick smoke hovered beneath the ceiling, while flames licked the plywood at the edges of the hatchway entrance. He drew a deep breath of tunnel air before entering the burning fort, his eyes tearing from the heat. Sliding along the long wall past the metal firebox, he tripped over the edge of the raised platform and fell hard upon his knees, but he fought the urge to cry out with so much smoke in the air. Instead, he scrambled forward to grab one of the skis leaning against the long wall, nearly knocking the second lamp from its stand as he turned back toward the tunnel with his lever tucked under his arm. By now, the ceiling had begun to burn, and his lungs ached for air as he clawed back through the growing inferno that had once been the pride of the Hurricanes. But he reached the tunnel unscathed and slid the ski into the dark hole before diving inside after it. Farther down the tunnel, he found fresher air and a hand to pull him up.
"I got the rope off,"
Bumbles said. "Good job." Jeff groped the floor in the darkness. "Where's that ski?"
"I have it. We'd better hurry."
Jeff took the ski from Bumbles and lugged it up the ladder. He drove his shoulder up against the hatchway door, lifting it enough against the heavy weight set upon it. Sunlight eked into the chamber as he wedged the curved ski tip upside down into the gap, while thick smoke began to pour into the tunnel from the fort.
"Hurry, Jeff!"
"Help me out!" he cried as he pulled down on the ski with all his might. Coughing and choking, Bumbles climbed the bottom rung of the ladder to grab the tail of the ski. He pulled down on it as Jeff continued to drive his shoulder up against the hatch. The ladder creaked beneath their weight, and the ski bent acutely from the strain of forces upon it. But the fresh air pouring into the shaft filled their lungs and fueled their energy. Finally, the obstruction rolled aside with a thud, and the hatchway door flew open to blinding sunlight. Jeff clambered out and fell upon the forest bed, while Bumbles dropped the ski and crawled beside him a moment later. They rolled onto their backs with their limbs spread out, gulping the cool air as smoke billowed from the burning pit and the tunnel entrance. Eventually, Bumbles sat up and pointed his thumb at the thick log that had blocked their escape route.
"They tried to kill me. What did I do to them?"
Jeff rose and walked to the edge of the burning fort, where the plywood ceiling buckled from the fire inside. "You just got in the way. It's me, Curly Wants." Bumbles stepped up and gazed down at the smoke and flames.
"He said he wanted to kill two Hurricanes with one stone. He's insane. So are you for climbing in there after me."
"Hey, I was just looking for some marshmallows." Jeff patted his friend on the shoulder. "You do the same for me, I'm sure."
"You know it, Jeff. I owe you big time."
They stood in silence, watching as the fire devoured the plywood ceiling. Inside the blazing pit, the flames finally reached the second oil lamp, and it burst open, spewing a rush of flames with its oil, and the ceiling collapsed into the pit moments later. The depth of the fort prevented the fire from climbing to the branches of the nearby pine trees, but a column of thick gray smoke curled high into the air. "We better get out of here. Someone's gonna see the smoke." Bumbles nodded.
"Where are we going?"
"To find Crazy Legs. I need my keys, and I'm running out of time." 10 minutes later, they stood on the back porch of the Kramer residence, with the sound of sirens converging upon the thin plume of smoke rising above the woods behind them. Jeff opened the storm door and rapped his knuckles loudly against the back door window. "He better be home," he said before knocking on the window again. Bumbles dusted off his dirty jeans with open palms.
"Mick's parents left on a booze cruise yesterday. I think some of the guys were gonna hang at his house."
Before Jeff could reply, the door opened to reveal Crazy Legs, shirtless and barefoot with a stick of celery in his hand.
"Hey guys, what's up?"
"I need my vest," Jeff said. "Bumble says you have it." Crazy Legs pushed the door open farther.
"Wow, you guys smell awful. You crawled through a sewer or something?"
The two boys stepped inside, leaving the door slightly ajar.
"Not exactly,"
Bumble said.
"Remember the fort?"
Crazy Legs chomped on a mouthful of celery.
Of course I remember the fort. I was just there an hour ago.
Well, it's gone now,
Bumbles said. The skinny boy gagged on his snack and fell into the nearest kitchen chair.
What do you mean it's gone?
It burned down.
Bumbles scratched his head.
Well, it was already underground, so I guess it really burned up.
You're kidding, right?
Crazy Legs saw the gravity in their faces and narrowed his eyes upon Jeff.
We all worked so hard on that fort, Jeff. What did you do?
Jeff drew back a step. Seriously?
Jeff didn't do anything, Bumbles replied. Curly and JJ jumped me while I was closing up, and they booby-trapped the place. I'd be pot roast if it wasn't for Jeff.
Jeff leveled an icy stare at the Hurricane Scout. Can I have my vest now? Crazy Legs left his celery stick on the table and slipped out of the kitchen. He returned a moment later with the green vest and handed it to Jeff.
Sorry, I didn't mean...
Save it. Jeff pulled the vest over his shoulders. He felt the keys in the left pocket, but nothing in the right pocket. Where's my phone? Crazy Legs shrugged.
I don't know. I didn't look inside the pockets.
Jeff winced as he remembered tossing the phone on the couch inside the fort earlier that morning. Shit, he muttered before retreating to the back door and pulling it open.
Where are you going?
Bumbles asked. Away from here, he said. I should have left a long time ago. Crazy Legs started forward.
Jeff, wait.
Jeff shut the back door on them, for there was nothing more to say. His severance from the Hurricanes was now complete. No handshakes, no parties, no laughter, no camaraderie. It felt like failure to him, but there was no other way. His head drooped in dejection as he descended the porch stairs to the Kramer's backyard. An aberrant thought made him smile again. Crazy Legs was right about one thing. He did smell awful. His face felt like soot, and his day-old clothes reeked of smoke and whiskey. There would be safe haven at his house for a short time, for despite their early morning spat, he knew his mother would never miss a precious day of work. And besides, he would be in and out of the house in less than half an hour. He crossed Spruce Lane two properties down from his residence and circled behind those houses for the back door of his home, where he found his keys still worked on the lock, as anticipated. Whatever intentions she had of evicting him, there was simply no way for her to change the locks in such a short time. 20 minutes later, he emerged from the bathroom, showered and shaved, with a damp bath towel fastened around his waist. As he passed by the kitchen, he noticed through the rear window a flash of blue lights racing up Arrow Drive as more sirens wailed in the distance. The thought of the police discovering the remains of the fort troubled him, for ample evidence of the hurricane's transgressions would certainly be found among the ashes. Then again, such a discovery might actually divert the attention of the police for a while as he sought to retrieve his Camaro from its hiding place, if indeed it was still there. He hurried downstairs and stripped the towel from his body, tossing it onto his bed before quickly donning fresh clothes and his favorite blue baseball cap. He reached for the roll of gauze on his desktop, but hesitated, poking the flesh around his stitched palm with minimal pain. Good enough, he muttered, as he brushed the gauze aside. After filling a gym bag with more clean clothes and backup sneakers, he grabbed what few valuables he owned and stuffed them into his backpack before zipping it shut. Lastly, he grabbed his sunglasses from the dresser and slipped them atop his head before rushing out of the bedroom and up the stairs with both bags in hand. Returning to the upstairs bathroom, he slipped into his sneakers and pulled his belt from his dirty pants when the telephone rang. He backed into the hallway, glaring at the kitchen phone as he fed the belt through the loops of his jeans, wondering who might be calling. Maybe it was his mother making sure he wasn't loafing around the house, or maybe it was Mick wanting to grill him about the fort, or maybe it was another stupid cop trick attempting to locate him. In any event, it was nobody he wanted to talk to. Unless... He rushed into the kitchen and snatched the receiver from the wall after the fifth ring, quickly checking the caller ID before answering it. Cindy?
Jeff, where have you been? Why aren't you answering your cell phone?
The sound of her voice helped ease his tension a bit. I lost it. Where are you?
School. What's going on? Everyone's talking about some junior who got stabbed last night.
Jeff tucked the phone under his chin as he fastened the belt into place. Really? What's his name?
I'm not sure. Nelson something, I think?
Don't know him. Listen, I need to see you tonight. Can I pick you up after school?
No, Jeff, my father's totally wigged out. I thought his head was going to explode this morning. My mom's not talking either. Something bad is going on. We can't let them see us together right now. Plus, I've got basketball tryouts after school.
But I have to see you. The line was silent for a moment. Finally, she said,
I think he's got some political thing after work tonight. They probably won't be home until midnight. Where do you want to go?
I don't care. Anywhere out of Salisbury. You decide. She was silent for a moment.
Okay. I got an idea. Come by at 6. They should be gone by then.
6? Jeff glanced at the kitchen clock and yanked at his hair in frustration. Okay. See you then.
Stay out of the driveway. Just in case.
I will. I promise. Gotta go. Bye. Jeff hung up and pulled out his wallet. He counted just 2 fives and 3 singles inside it, but more money was literally within reach. The 5 $20 bills hidden inside the cookie jar wouldn't get him to California, but they would at least get him across the state line. He took the jar from atop the refrigerator and reached inside, astonished to find instead that it was empty. His mother's unspoken message was clear: no more help. Jeff raised the jar over his head, ready to smash it on the kitchen floor. Instead, he set the cookie jar on the counter and placed his house key inside before shutting the lid. He hoped his message was equally clear. The key was no longer needed because the house was no longer home. Cindy will lend me money, he assured himself as he finished tying his sneakers. He took his green vest from a kitchen chair and pulled it onto his back before slipping his arms through the straps of his backpack and pulling it onto his back as well. With the gym bag slung over his shoulder, he stepped to the back door and opened it, stopping at the storm glass window to check his reflection before slipping on his sunglasses. The glasses and ball cap obscured his features fairly well, and the backpack and gym bag lent the appearance of any anonymous student walking down to the plazas after school. He stepped out onto the porch and shut the back door behind him, scurrying down the stairs and across the backyard, over the rail of the fence, and through the abutting yard to the curb of Arrow Drive with the gym bag jostling behind him. He darted across the street and up the steep embankment on the other side to re-enter the woods at the mouth of the hilltop path. Within minutes, he had ascended to the panoramic view of Bobcat Hill. But he was more interested in the wooded area blocking his sightline to the near side of the upper plaza. The main path wound down the other side of the hill and into the woods toward Mr. Big, but Jeff knew of another path, crossing an acre of birch and maple saplings leading more directly toward Burrow Street. Soon the upper plaza came into view through the sparse trees, and he could see the aftermath of the previous night. The gaping hole in the stockade fence, the scattered wood fragments across the sand, and the deep tire ruts where Curly's truck had been driven through it. He spotted the white brick wall where he and Train had last conversed, but he quickly turned away, for there was no time for nostalgia now. In the adjacent property, an abandoned, dilapidated house stood facing Burrow Street, where a doorless double-bay garage set 50 feet ahead housed the Camaro and shielded it from the view of the road. Jeff sighed with relief, thankful that the car had not been discovered by anyone but a hurricane. He fumbled for his keys as he jogged toward the car, pulling his hat from his sweaty brow when he arrived at the door. After stuffing the bags into the back seat, he slid behind the steering wheel and cranked the engine to life. The stereo clock read nearly 3 o'clock as he shut the door and fastened the seatbelt, still hours away from his rendezvous with Cindy. But at least he had his car back and could drive away from the beehive of activity that the neighborhoods and plazas had become. He backed out of the garage and shifted into first gear, rolling his shiny blue car in broad daylight down the rocky driveway to the curbside of the busy street. What he failed to notice as he turned the car to merge with the southbound traffic was a green pickup truck with a broken headlight parked outside Krusty's restaurant, in precisely the same space and manner as it had been parked the night before, its two occupants keenly aware of the conspicuous Camaro pulling away.